jeopardized by two intersecting epidemics. Okay, the first, of course, is sexually transmitted disease. And as you can see by these statistics, chlamydia, which is one of the most bacterial STD, is one of the most common reportable STDs that occurs out of the STDs. And I know 3% doesn't seem like it's very high, but in comparison to males, that represents a rate twice as great as males for chlamydia. And chlamydia, and of course the statistic too, is among those cases that were reported. A lot of cases of chlamydia go unreported because there's no symptoms involved. And unfortunately, chlamydia is associated with many complications such as pelvic inflammatory disease, which can lead to serious ectopic pregnancies, infertility, and other serious problems. Gonorrhea is similar. Also, gonorrhea among 15 to 19-year-old adolescent females, they have the highest rate of gonorrhea, even though it's not as great as chlamydia. And HPV, we now know, HPV is a virus, it's not a bacterial STD, so it can't be treated with antibiotics. It's now the most common STD among young people. And it's, as you can see, the statistic says approximately 40% of girls 15 to 19 have HPV. Some of the strains of HPV, and there's about 100 of them, will eventually leave the body over time, but unfortunately the higher risk strains can result in cervical cancer, cancer of the vagina, and even throat cancer. Trichomoniasis, now that's probably one of the most common curable STDs. About 15% of 15 to 19-year-olds get trichomoniasis. Complications are not as serious with trich, but if you're pregnant, it can lead to premature birth, low birth weight, and it's a risk factor for HIV. So much research has been done with adolescents, particularly female adolescents, to see what the risk factors are for getting an STD. And a lot of these risk factors cross different domains. We have personal risk factors, familial risk factors, relational factors, and clearly this list is not exhaustive. This is just a few. So for example, girls who are high in sensation seeking are more likely to get an STD. The family factors, parental monitoring is very important. Much research has shown that girls whose parents have low monitoring are more likely to get an STD. And not surprising, the relational factors, having an older partner, a risky partner, and one of the most interesting ones to me is having a partner who abuses you either physically or sexually. So being a victim of dating violence is a serious risk factor for getting an STD, which leads us to our second epidemic. I use the term gender-based violence. I know everyone, it depends on your perspective. A lot of other researchers use dating violence. Some use intimate partner violence. I use gender-based violence because it takes into consideration that this type of violence is gendered. Gendered plays a role here overwhelmingly. It's males who are much more violent than females. And males are responsible for most of the injury and homicides committed against women. So in this study, I'm defining gender-based violence as any type of sexual or physical abuse perpetrated against a female. And as you can see, a lot of research has been done looking at the prevalence of gender-based violence among adolescent females. Some studies have found that 20% of adolescent girls have experienced some form, and that's from a nationally representative sample. Among sexually active girls in particular, a nationally representative sample found about a third have been a victim of gender-based violence. And even at the high school age, 18%. So as you can see, that these statistics are pretty alarming. And some of the consequences of being a victim of gender-based violence include disordered eating behaviors. A lot of girls who are victimized are more likely to use laxatives, vomiting, binging, things like that. They're much more at risk for depression, lower self-esteem, PTSD, and they're about 26 times as likely to abuse substances. So there's very serious sequelae with being a victim of gender-based violence. Okay, so how do these two epidemics intersect? Well, there's been a lot of studies with adult women, and overwhelmingly, they've shown robust relationships with experienced sexual coercion, physical, psychological, or sexual abuse, and then engaging in HIV-related risk behaviors, such as lack of condom use, trading sex for money, having casual sex partners, and more partners. Studies with adult women has also shown that being a victim has been related to an inability to negotiate condom use with their partner. And retrospective studies have shown that HIV-positive women are more likely than HIV-negative women to report being victims of rape or sexual coercion. And experience in childhood sexual abuse is a major risk factor for HIV infection as an adult. Not as much research has been done with female adolescents, but the research that has been done has shown that there is a direct relationship between experiencing gender-based violence and a history of STD, and that's been found among representative samples and among clinical samples as well. So how does gender-based violence victimization place female adolescents at risk for STDs? Well, there are several hypotheses that have been put forth to explain this relationship. And one is that it's a direct, they are affected directly by their partner who's abusing them because he, in fact, is more risky and he, in fact, is infecting her with an STD. There has been research done among male perpetrators that male perpetrators are more likely themselves to engage in high-risk sexual behavior. In fact, there was a presentation yesterday that found among male perpetrators, they were three times as likely to have a history of STD in comparison to non-perpetrators. So this is one hypothesis put forth that women and female girls who experience victimization are getting affected directly by their abusive partners. Another hypothesis is more indirect, and that just suggests that because girls and women who experience gender-based violence, they tend to have serious psychological effects. So they have lower self-esteem, depression, they're more likely to abuse substances. So this all plays a role in their coping strategies. So they tend to engage in avoiding coping strategies, which in turn places them at risk for getting an STD. So, for example, they may have sex while they're high on drugs or alcohol, they're using alcohol more frequently, they may engage themselves in high-risk sexual behaviors, more partners, casual partners. And lastly, part of the indirect is that having an abusive partner will in turn limit your ability to negotiate using a condom with him. There are studies that have shown when females ask their partner to use a condom, abusive males will in turn react with violence at some times or accuse the woman that she doesn't trust him, and so he's limiting her ability that way. Interested in testing one of these perspectives, namely the indirect one that get that this pattern of risk behaviors that results from having some kind of psychological consequences to being a victim of violence. And I'm going to test it among a high-risk sample of female adolescents, mainly detained female adolescents. And although gender-based violence and STDs are prevalent among all strata of youth, for some reason they haven't been, these two epidemics haven't been researched among a very high-risk population of youth, particularly detained female adolescents. And detained female adolescents are medically underserved, vulnerable. They're at heightened risk for a whole host of sexual risk behavior, physical and sexual abuse, other trauma, engaging and using substances, and it just goes on and on and on. And interestingly, in 2002, there were over 60,000 female detained adolescents in our country. So since the 80s, this is a population that has grown vastly, mainly because of changes to arrest laws, zero tolerance policies, things like that. So our high-risk population was recruited from 8 regional youth detention centers located across Georgia. We had a sample size of 240 females, but this was part of a larger study where we recruited both males and females to just determine the prevalence of correlates of STD infection among this population. We had to go through the usual steps. We had to get the support of the medical director of the juvenile justice system in Georgia, get her on board this project. We were able to recruit about 587 youth. We first had to obtain 2 sets of IRB approvals, one from Emory University and one from the State Department of Juvenile Justice. We also had to obtain parental consent or consent of a legal guardian before we could even approach the youth to see if they wanted to participate in the study. We used a CASI to collect the, administer the questionnaire that contained all the measures. And to test for chlamydia, we had the girls give us a first catch urine specimen, which was then taken to a lab for analysis. And we did test for gonorrhea as well, but it was really very, very low. So our measures, we asked the girls whether or not they had ever had vaginal sex, and we gave them a definition that vaginal sex is when a man puts his penis in your vagina. To measure the prevalence of gender-based violence, we used 2 items. Has a boyfriend ever physically abused you? And by abuse, we mean hitting, slapping, kicking, choking, and pushing. And has a boyfriend ever sexually abused you, that is, force you to have sex or give oral sex when you didn't want to. So these are the 7 STD-associated risk behaviors that kind of constitute that pattern of risk I was talking about. So we looked at condom use last intercourse, frequency of UBS, sex while high or partner high, whether or not they traded sex for money or sex for drugs, their number of their male partners, and condom failures. And all these STD-associated risk behaviors were measured in the time frame using corresponding to the 2 months prior to them being detained. This is considered a mediation data analysis, because I was interested in seeing first if there was a direct association between gender-based violence and chlamydia, and then second, to see whether or not any of those 7 STD risk behaviors explain that much higher than representative samples of females. The mean age was about 15. But more importantly, 31% had experienced some form and 15% had chlamydia. I did bivariate group comparisons just to see which variables I should control for in the subsequent analyses. So age, race, family index, and school enrollment. And they were all non-significant except for school enrollment. Okay, the first step was supported. Gender-based violence did have a direct effect on chlamydia, as you can see. And then secondly, gender-based violence had significant direct effects on only two of the seven STD-associated behaviors: having sex while high or partner high, on drugs or alcohol, and condom failures. The other five behaviors were not significantly related. Okay, and then the third step. The indirect effect was significant for both of these STD-associated behaviors. So this suggests that the reason there is a relationship between experiencing gender-based violence and having chlamydia is explained because these girls are having sex while high or partner high, and because they are more likely to have condom failures. But when you think about it, well, I thought about it afterwards. I thought, well, having sex while high or partner high and condom failures, maybe those two things were related. So I did a post hoc analysis to see if they were. And controlling for frequency of vaginal sex, these two were related. So girls who reported sex while high or partner high had significantly more condom failures than girls who didn't report that behavior. So our pattern of risk theory was partially supported to the behaviors. Overall, detained youth use substances at higher rates than the general population, but for girls who experience gender-based violence, this places them at even greater risk. So using substances for them may be a negative type of coping strategy, and it may be for these girls using substances alleviates the stress of being in an abusive relationship. Alternatively, because this is cross-sectional, it could be that detained adolescent girls use substances at an elevated rate, and therefore they're more vulnerable, and they may be coming into contact with boyfriends who will tend to abuse them. And then this forms a vicious cycle, and there's some longitudinal research to suggest that this cycle forms with a higher rate of substances, which in turn makes them vulnerable to the abuse, and then because they're abused, they start using substances even more. The association between gender-based violence and condom failures could be explained by the use of substances, which we found in the post hoc analysis, but there has been other research that's found among adolescent girls depression and elevated stress are associated with a greater likelihood to have condom use problems, suggesting that condom use problems manifest as a direct result of heightened emotional stress. The other sexual risk behaviors and mediators was not supported. I think in this sample, some of the risk behaviors, for example, like trading sex for money, trading sex for drugs, hardly any of the girls were engaged in these behaviors, so I really didn't have enough variance to find anything significant there. But the other behaviors, for some reason among this population, this is not consistent with other research, so I think future research needs to show why this high-risk sample of girls, some of these other behaviors, such as last condom use, protect. protective vaginal effects were not, did not explain this relationship. These results suggest that girls coming into clinics to get treatment for STDs perhaps should be screened for gender-based violence and then referred to appropriate counseling. Educational programs, sexual risk reduction programs should consider whether or not some girls are victims of gender-based violence, just given the prevalence, 31%, 33%. So you can't have a young female in a sexual risk reduction program and teach her how to negotiate condom use, teach her how to use condoms correctly, without acknowledging that she might have a boyfriend who is abusive toward her. There are limitations to the study, of course. This is detained youth. Results may not be generalizable to other populations of female adolescents. And this was a convenient sample, so it may not be generalizable even to other detained female adolescents. And the cross-sectional design, of course, is a major limitation. But I think one strength which helps with the temporal order is that we did ask girls if they've ever experienced gender-based violence, and then the behaviors were measured in the 2 months prior to their detention. It is possible that the person they were referring to when they said they had experienced abuse was the same partner they were engaging in these high-risk behaviors, which is some support for that first direct hypothesis, but it seems unlikely.